Hey listeners, welcome to 10x Growth Strategies podcast. This is your host, Preeti Padmanabhan, technology executive, investor, and board member. Today, we will feature the book Multipliers by Liz Wiseman. Our guest today is Lucy Newcomb, CEO of the Newcomb Global Group. Welcome, Lucy, to 10x Growth Strategies podcast.
Thank you so much.
Lucy Newcomb is the CEO and founder of the Newcomb Global Group, a leading international advisory and training firm specializing in global business development and global leadership. She holds a master's degree in leadership and two related certifications. She specializes in go-to-market strategies internationally and global leadership development. I'm super excited to have you, Lucy. Looking forward to hear your inputs on the book we chose. So we have chosen the book Multipliers. Why did you choose to read this book?
Yes. It's great to be here, and I'm excited to contribute to what I think is going to be a really generative conversation. So in terms of why I chose this book, I am always looking for ways to deepen and improve my own leadership capacity. And this book, you know, has been quite popular a little while ago. I tend to run a little behind, like many of us. And so even though it's more of a management versus leadership book at some points, and I say that because it's largely behavioral, I think new behaviors can sometimes evoke new capacity. And so this is a whole different framework from what I've read before. And I was very excited and remain excited about trying some new frameworks.
Absolutely. Looking forward. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm eager to hear your contributions. For example, if we talk about the accidental diminishers briefly, which is the opposite of a multiplier, but kind of, we'll talk more about that. And there are a number of ways that all of us tend to sort of move into the accidental diminisher or have been there. And so it's really exciting for me to learn about ways that I can specifically and incisively improve my ability to lead, and I think also be led in some respects.
You bring a really good point in terms of actually both being a leader as well as being led. This book is such a key element because it can apply to both sides of how someone could actually appreciate someone else's leadership.
Thank you. I mean, you know, Ken Blanchard, who really decades ago talked about situational leadership, I think really helped a lot of us. I think especially in tech, where we work so closely together, and you and I both work in the tech industry, you know, to be in those situational leadership things is to always remember, excuse me, at least I always remember being a follower and a leader. You know, how do I become a better leader? And then when the situation's turned, how am I more effective in being part of a team? So I look forward to your comments about that too.
Absolutely. I think this book has changed the way on how I look at productivity and how I look at increasing my own capacity and the capacity of my team. And we will unpack more. But first, I want to hear what are your top takeaways from the book?
Well, thank you. As we've already touched upon a few times, this is really a content-heavy book. So it's a little bit harder than usual, at least for me, to isolate the top three things, the top four things, but I'm going to give it a bash. I'm happy to highlight a couple of them. And I really encourage listeners to read this book, even if you only get partway through or dip into certain chapters that we talk more about. I think it's well worth any professional's time and energy to move forward in some of these areas. So here's a couple of things I talked about here. Inherent is the assumption of multipliers that we have the ability to change work outcomes and to influence them positively. You know, in the same way that I talked about this being a largely behavioral book, that means that in this framework, not necessarily all the time, but within this multiplier framework, we have the capacity to influence, change, and in certain respects, control a lot more of our working environment, or even what our day might look like, perhaps even happiness at work, than many other frameworks that are pretty much top down. So that's one of the things I liked. The other thing is the assumption that we also have the ability to influence others positively and to help them become multipliers too. You know, sometimes there are frameworks that are very much us, them, keep things secret, you know, move your power base to just you. And this is completely not that. It's not a kumbaya book at all. It's not a touchy-feely book at all. But it is a more is better kind of book, I would say. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think the point you mentioned about how multipliers create more multipliers, that made a lot of sense to me. Because unless you're a multiplier and you inspire others on how to become a multiplier, you're not able to achieve that multiplying effect in your team. So I really appreciated that point you talked about. But before we go any further, I think it's very important to define who is a multiplier, or what is a multiplier, and what are the key qualities of a multiplier?
So, per the author, multipliers are genius makers who bring out our intelligence in others. They build collective viral intelligence in organizations. And I thought the word intelligence was really an interesting use of the word here. You know, it doesn't mean make you better, it doesn't mean make you competent. I think that's a fascinating word that we can talk about a bit later. One of the points I was going to make about my takeaways is that the author really raises the bar from many management books sort of strive for more competency, more productivity, as you were saying. But to me, this book, just in terms of the languaging, raises the bar quite a bit. She talks a lot about genius making, brilliance. Mm-hmm. You know, those are pretty exceptional levels of operation, don't you think?
Absolutely, yeah. I think the whole aspect of excellence, raising the bar, genius making is fantastic.
I found it really unusual, and perhaps it's somewhat unique to this author because I've not read anything else by her, that she would raise the bar in this very sort of matter-of-fact way, right? Intelligence, genius, brilliance, these are all very cerebral, but nevertheless, I appreciated that, and it sounds like you did too.
Absolutely. And what are some other takeaways you had from the book?
Well, the other one I would say, the third one would be the concept of accidental diminisher, which we're going to talk in detail about shortly. So I don't need to dwell on that now, but just for my own sort of personal takeaway, it's humbling to realize that maybe I'm not always effective as I think I am. And I think her comment about, you know, many of us kind of swing back and forth between accidental diminisher or have been, and we will talk more about that in detail, like I said. So that was a good takeaway for me. One of the things that I'll mention later, and may as well now actually, is although the book is set up as some kind of polarity, you know, multipliers, diminishers, kind of black and white, accidental kind of crosses both. And I tend to think, and I look forward to your feedback here, I really see them I see it all as more of a continuum. And I'm happy to talk about that more later. But I think it's a bit of a mistake just because otherwise I think we end up saying, oh, I'm a multiplier Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and a diminisher Tuesday, Thursday. And, you know, Saturday's up for grabs, maybe accidental. You know, we don't really operate that way, I don't think.
Yeah, we don't. And one thing I really liked was the whole parallel to the growth mindset. That book also got mentioned, and we have featured that book in our podcast, where they talk about intelligence can be developed. And so I found that what I recognized for myself was I can be a multiplier in some areas, and I could be a diminisher in some areas. So how do I proactively identify where I'm a multiplier and then parlay that to other areas? So I can give a quick example. I've been very interested in investing in real estate since my childhood or young adult ages, and I've always constantly looked for opportunities, and that was like a growth mindset, like a multiplier effect. And I used to help even my friends to make good investments. But in my career, I was looking at it in a different direction, where I kept looking at it as a ladder. And everybody talks about the career ladder. And I kept thinking, oh, I have to do step 1 through 5 in order to go to my next level promotion. At one point, one of my coaches told me that, why don't you look at like career like real estate? You just go and all in on real estate and you take risks, you do what feels right, you're not afraid of failure. And it really changed my perspective. And I started looking at my career not as a ladder, but as a hot air balloon, where I can just go in the balloon and jump where I want to. You know, that is something I wasn't being a diminisher to my own career. And I had to shift my paradigm, right, and become a multiplier. And that helped, like, you know, boomerang my career and shoot it up. Yeah.
Wow, that is an amazing realization. Thank you for sharing that. That is so contrary particularly, I think, how women are generally groomed for careers and all of us these days. And in tech, you know, it's even more of a pressure to specialize. And actually, similar to you, I only started to really flourish in my career when I stopped listening to that, because I was a generalist from way back. And I really broadened out further. And that's when my career really took off. So I think, you know, it's great that you found your hot air balloon. I love that metaphor.
Lovely. It's always good, you know, thinking in pictures, right? I'm a very visual person. Was there any other point on the qualities of multiplier before we drill down into some of the additional aspects that you want to share?
Thank you. I think I should probably go through what the author calls the disciplines. This is, again, an interesting word. You know, we're sort of talking about language extra today. She calls this the five disciplines versus, you know, we might normally call them qualities, but her word is disciplines. So please allow me to just go through them quickly. One is the talent magnet, who attracts and optimizes talent. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. The liberator, who requires people's best thinking. Challenger, like the name says, extends challenges. And the debate maker, who debates decisions. Then the investor, who instills accountability.
Wonderful. I think these are all five great disciplines, and we can unpack each one of them. Let's start with the talent magnet aspect and drill down into that. Multipliers are great talent magnets who are able to attract the best talents and utilize them to the full. That's what I read in the book. And the author says that A players become A plus players, creating a cycle of attraction. I would love to hear any examples of multipliers who have shaped careers of their team members.
I think the best one was the author's depiction of Meg Whitman, who's the former CEO of eBay and HP, and Mitt Romney, the representative who's run for president twice. She talks about how, you know, Meg was a newly minted MBA from Harvard and landed at Bain consulting firm. And she had heard that Mitt was the person to work for. And she didn't know why, but she heard that. So she made her way to do that. But once she started to work for him, she got to really understand what his characteristics were in terms of a talent magnet. He helped people grow. He got them engaged. He took the time to know each and every consultant. And he leveraged that to make good client consultant project fits. His favorite questions would be things like, what's getting in the way of your being successful? Or what would be a good stretch assignment for you? Cut to the chase. The author opens this chapter with Meg Whitman introducing Mitt Romney in her garden fundraiser for him when he was running for president for the second time in 2012. So clearly they had many years of continued support, collaboration, and learning. And so I think that's a wonderful example. Cut to the chase now. Mitt is, of course, still a strong legislator, and Meg is now the U.S. ambassador to Kenya. So clearly their years of collaboration by her recognizing a talent magnet and him being one worked very well.
I love that example. I think they're both great leaders and inspiring role models. I have admired Meg being one of the few women Fortune 500 CEOs, and that's few and far between, right? Less than 5% of women. And the fact that Mitt Romney helped Meg to realize her potential, and the way Meg is thriving, not only as a CEO and a corporate leader, but as an ambassador now and doing different things in her life. It's so aspirational to me. Thank you for sharing that example. I would love to hear any example of a multiplier from your life.
Well, thank you. I think I might be speaking to one right now, but let me share another one that I have in mind. yes, thankfully, it's a rare occasion, but this is an odd thing to mention, but I'm going to anyway. The first was actually my dear late mother, who exemplified that she could be a magnificent multiplier and an occasional diminisher. But since we're in a business context, I'll talk about my colleague, Dana Gillett, who is senior vice president and of SVG at a company called AppJet. I met her as head of Chiefs Board Services Group. And she so impressed me and took me in right away as a secondary leader to her. And she really takes charge in a very calm manner. As you know, since we have both been chiefs, it's calm is not always the word because we're often very enthusiastic in any case. But she's very good at sharing power, giving support, providing solace while staying present. She's a meditation teacher. She's certified under Deepak Chopra, and I think it shows in her business conduct as well. And so it was a pleasure to support her efforts in chief and in the board services community with helping her get speakers and so forth. And I'm really grateful to her that she, you know, treated me as an equal from the beginning when she's eager to help me, et cetera. So, and this is sort of her side hustle, right? This isn't even her job. So I think that speaks a lot for her multiplier capabilities.
Certainly, meditation can help all of us become multipliers. I can attest to that because I've been meditating for over 20 years myself. A fantastic example. Thank you, Lucy, for sharing that. Earlier, you mentioned about the term diminishers. In contrast to a multiplier, the diminishers are those who focus on looking smart themselves. And the author says that they suck the energy of everybody around them, unfortunately. What are the key differences between diminishers and multipliers?
Well, thank you for that. I think that's a key question. And as I mentioned to you earlier, I tend to see them, it's good to talk about them in contrast. And I also see it as a continuum. So let me just go back very quickly, 2 seconds to mention again the typology for multipliers. So we have talent magnets, liberators, challengers, debate makers, and investors. The disciplines, uses the same word, the author, of the disciplines of the diminishers are empire building, tyrants, know-it-all, and solo decision-making, and micromanaging. So those are, you know, you can see the contrast is kind of more other-oriented and self-oriented is the really simplistic, you know, distinction I would make. But I think that's very simplistic. I know earlier in my career, I was actually trained and was, I wouldn't say empire building necessarily, but this reminds me more of the earlier command and control modality. You're probably too young to remember that, Preeti, but, you know, before we started doing consensus of participatory management and collaboration and things like that, which I might consider as introduction of women in the workforce in another conversation, it seemed that, you know, command and control, top down, you know, you kind of just did what you were told. This sort of, to me, reflects that phase of management.
That makes a lot of sense. In fact, you summed it up very beautifully. You talked about multipliers thinking about others and the diminishers thinking about themselves. Nobody wants to work for an empire builder or somebody who makes all the decisions or somebody who just gives direction and doesn't give the opportunity for others to also be a leader. So certainly, like, diminishers are some people who people run away from as team members. And then there are these accidental diminishers. And I can see myself, I may have been an accidental diminisher to others at some times. And I've been an accidental diminisher to myself, as I mentioned earlier. Tell us about the types of accidental diminishers and how do people ensure that they do not become an accidental diminisher?
Thank you for that set of complex questions. What I can say after reading the book and being humbled, and I think having a lifelong inquiry about this, because I don't think it's a fixed point, it's kind of inevitable that we're going to be accidental diminishers. Like I said, if it's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or over a certain issue, like you said, a particular capability. So it's, even in the book, at the end of it, is a wonderful series of exercises and experiments on, she doesn't say ever, you know, eliminate being an accidental diminisher. She never says anything like that. She says how to minimize your tendencies, you know, so there's a clear expectation that we're human and we're just going to go there. But awareness is so much. And so I think this chapter and this particular facet of the book, where a lot of us end up probably at certain points in the day too, probably our energy level may have something to do with it, or the context of whether we had a good conversation or not, all those things, I think so. The awareness piece, I think, is so critical. Let me talk about some of the, there are actually 9 types You know, so it's almost, again, almost impossible not to fall into one of nine buckets at some point. That said, awareness is important, and steering clear of them as much as possible is also important. Here are three of the nine. So one is the always on, which I think those of us in tech and Silicon Valley, we cannot help but fall into this at least a little bit. Because the pressure is we will always be on, right? The phone will always be available, et cetera. And some companies are more adamant about that than others, but I don't know about you, Preeti, but not really. And the problem is that, you know, it creates connection and engagement and all that cool stuff. And certainly in tech, you know, if you don't answer your email in 4 hours in some places where I've worked, they think you're dead. They might send someone for you. You know, that's kind of like that. So that, you know, that kind of camaraderie, if you want to call it that, and engagement has some upside. But the downside is, and I can attest to this being true, is, you know, the person engaging that way, the company engaging that way, takes up all the space. There's just no room, right? And those of us who have worked in companies like that, we kind of, you know, work there and go to bed. I mean, there's just no space for much of anything. So I think those of us in the Valley or in tech anywhere probably have to keep a little bit of an eye. I can only speak for myself. I certainly do. The rescuer is... Again, you know, I'd say this was my mother's scenario, wanting to help, wanting to ensure success of the team. And unfortunately, that also creates dependencies and that creates weakness. So we'll see later that there are other exercises. You know, Mitt Romney talked about what's the best stretch exercise for you, stretch engagement for you. Those kinds of capacities of just, you know, being aware that not always the kind thing is necessarily the right thing in the workspace, of course. And the third thing is the pace setter. Getting a high bar or a pace to inspire can leave people behind. And of course, this brings up for me again, tech, because one of the biggest adjustments I had to make, you know, 20 plus years ago and moving into tech is that fast is more important than best. And that has been a big adjustment. And sometimes I have left people behind. So I'm very sympathetic to people like that. And I'm also very aware of my own fallibility in this area. How about you?
I could relate to all of what you talked about, right? Talking about the always on, now with the whole Slack and WhatsApp being telling everybody whether you read their message.
You mean one of their 200 messages today?
Yes, exactly. That's like every day. And one of my meditation teachers, once when I was telling her that I take my phone for my walk every day, she was telling me like, how about you keep it aside one time and just take a walk and be there in that moment and see how it clears your mind. And I did that. I do that from time to time. And even this morning, I spent about 20 minutes looking at my phone, and it really gave a huge perspective. I felt so much lighter. It makes a huge difference to step away from that always on. I could relate to that. And the rescuer part, that's very interesting. I can relate how you talked about your mother being that, and our moms are our role models. I'm just like you. My mother was my role model and, you know, my first role model, and how they actually go above and beyond. And this is something probably we as women have to be mindful of, because we tend to always care and we want to make sure everybody's taken care of. But maybe the best approach at that point is to let them realize on their own, especially I've realized that as a parent, that for my son, I should not always try to go rescue him. I'd rather let him learn and make his own mistakes. And I had to do that for his college application. And that turned out to be such a blessing that he became a true, adult in that process. So certainly I can relate to all the pieces that you talked about there.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I'm a meditator also. I have been for a long time. And I think one of the hardest things, back to the rescuer point of view, is some things are really meant to fall apart. And it's so hard, because I think a lot of the systems we are seeing now that have kind of been around a while aren't really working. And it's so tempting to want to prop them up, both frankly, as one who gets impatient about them falling apart, but also because, you know, I want things to be okay. I mean, I want to be a supportive person, and yet some things really are meant to fall apart. Some projects, you know, my one of my very biggest weaknesses professionally is that I can oversell. I can go too far for the customer. We really should just let go of those kinds of things. So this rescuer persona or attribute, if you like, however you want to call it, discipline in this case, it's a piece that, you know, like the tyrant, those are all pieces of ourselves that we can kind of pull forward or not. And it's interesting in this framework that that's almost like a con in the pro and con scenario. So you and I are both working on that.
Yeah. And there were some other interesting ones too. One was the perfectionist, right? And we all know, you know, about perfectionist, and certainly we can avoid being that. Interesting one was the whole optimist, right? Like people talk about positive can-do attitude, but at the same time, what I appreciated there was like maybe leaders, we have to also be pragmatic about our team members. And while we are inspiring them, we can also give them feedback on how they can actually make the shifts to become a better performer. So those were some other interesting ones. And I think all nine were very interesting. Thank you for sharing those thoughts.
Sure. The one I have to keep tweaking is the know-it-all. Because, you know, yes, I was kind of obnoxious like that growing up. And I don't want to be that anymore. But it's also very challenging when as a manager of the head of a management consulting firm, we sell expertise, right? I mean, if we don't know more than most people, we don't have a business. So I have to try and navigate. You know, I'm constantly, luckily for me, it was a natural fit. But part of my being a trusted advisor is to make it very clear that I'm a partner, that we are partners. You know, it's not about being better than, sometimes it's about extra hands just because people are so busy. But hopefully we are providing extra news and kind of a hack, if you like, hopefully at a higher level, you know, into international markets, into dynamics and so forth, that's our area of study. So that kind of like you go to a doctor and then you go to a specialist when you need them. Hopefully we are that specialist that allows you to get what you need versus knowing it all, which I definitely do not.
Absolutely. Well, let's get back to multipliers again, and let's also unpack a couple more things so our audience can actually look at some strategies to be multipliers. How are multipliers able to create the intensity that requires best thinking and yet give everybody a safe space to do their best work, right? What are some strategies used by multipliers to drive better decisions?
Thank you. Well, again, I think if we go back to, it's so nice to choose Mitt Romney because he is a great example of some of these specific behaviors. At least the story here is. He actually met with everyone on his team. So that means he listened, right? Because he used that, and it wasn't just cursory. And as the author said, he didn't just meet to talk about project deliverables, which is, you know, our work product in consulting. But he'd also ask, you know, what kind of stretch assignments do you want? How do you want to grow? He wasn't asking about, you know, we came to talk about mothers a lot today. He wasn't asking about, you know, your mom, but he was asking, you know, what do you want in your career? How do you want to grow in your career? So I think that one-to-one engagement that goes beyond the getting the work done kind of conversation is very important. And then, of course, the corollary of that is listening. You know, it's not enough to ask. You have to actually listen to what you hear. So I think that's one very specific behavior. And that kind of conversation does drive intensity, right? Because you're really honed in on one person in this conversation. You're honed in on what they want. And in many cases, especially early in their career, you know, career is almost everything, right? The proportion of investment is significant. So that level of commitment, I think, is very important. The listening and the follow-up there. As you go further in the book, there are a number of other comments that it's fascinating. It's at the risk of sounding utilitarian. This is what the author says. Multipliers are adept at getting more out of people. That's how she defines it. And so that's where it dips in from leadership to management, because we're going into the behavioral. But, you know, it's really, even though there are a lot of other attributes and implications, it's really about productivity in a lot of ways. And so I think when you tie that back to intensity, you know, in the old days, it would have been, you have to produce so many widgets, right? And then you'd be productive. That I don't know if you ever watch Lucille Ball stuff. Do you ever watch I Love Lucy? There's a couple of crazy scenes where she had to make chocolate balls and she ends up eating them, and it's hilarious.
Yes, I have seen that. No, I have actually, because the production line is too fast and she was not able to wrap it, so she had to pop it in her mouth. I've seen that scene.
Okay, so it's kind of, you know, that's kind of how productivity used to be measured, right? How many candy balls can you get down the line? And, you know, hopefully you aren't popping them in your mouth. The idea is to get them down the line. And so, you know, she says, you know, that you're going to get, you know, if we take the Lucy example, which, you know, hopefully your reader, your listeners will relate to, these folks, you know, multipliers can do 2 times the work, according to her research, or 2 times the chocolate balls in this case, that those who report to diminishers can do. So this is kind of interesting. We see that, you know, if we go back to the Meg example, we see that they got ahead and did well. Even the author herself, right, has done very well in her job. And she's, you know, by producing this book, and she does workshops and all these things. So she's sort of living her own example. The assertion shows, like I said, that folks get 2 times more from teams than diminishers do. And that's interesting because that she specifically said even more than those that use a hammer, which was metaphorical, of course. But still, you know, the idea is command and control was never good because it wasn't nice, clearly, and people are people. But B, it didn't even work very well, because if you're a multiplier and you really use these skills, supposedly, according to this research, you're going to get 2 times out of people. So did you have a comment about that?
I think, you know, the whole aspect of getting 2 times out of people, I really like thought, in fact, at one point, there was even a comment that the author makes where people think that they're giving more than 24 hours to them, right? That they're working more than 100%, which is very interesting, right? Because you can only work 100% of the time you can work, and you can't do more, but the quality of the work is so good when they report to a multiplier. So that is what I found very interesting. And I also found interesting was that one interesting thing was that the author says the multipliers are not a goody-goody bunch, right? They're not the type who are like, oh, you're great. It's not about like praise and flattery and trying to make somebody feel good. You obviously need to make your feel team positive and, you know, inspired. But at the same time, that ability to actually, motivate them to do that 2x was what really struck to me.
Yes, you're right. And it's good that you mentioned that. I think, you know, she doesn't really dwell on this, but many of us have, you know, read the advocacy for things like corporate values and core values and things like that. This is a little bit different, although I think the core behaviors are probably very similar. The asking the questions, the listening. You know, at the very end of the book, she says, if you can only do one thing, learn to ask really good questions. And so I think this whole idea of inquiry, really what we're talking about is the process of inquiry, reflection, behavior. It's so important. I don't know if you remember from grad school, one of those charming textbooks we had to read about case studies. The one that's always stuck with me is the Hawthorne experiment. This is from the 1920s, where this was a specific study on productivity, where the workers in General Electric, that they turned the lights up to see if that would make them more productive. And it did. And then they turned the lights down and they still got more productive. And so what the conclusion from that study was, not about the lights, it's about the attention. You know, someone was actually caring what was happening and they weren't just sitting in some room churning out widgets. And I think there's a level, although she never says this, but implicit in all these disciplines, if you like, of the multiplier is a level of attention, right? I'm going to listen to what you want as a stretch assignment. I'm going to make sure that I match you with a client project that's a success for you. Because, by the way, that's a success for the company also.
Wonderful. I love it. I love that. That shows the adaptability and ability to adjust and still excel at what you do. I was wondering, I found myself reflecting on potential gender factors. Do you have any observations about gender factors and multipliers?
Well, thank you. It's funny that you mentioned that because and I do look forward to your reflections about that. I've just begun to call this kind of a lived inquiry, as we say in leadership work, where I'm going to keep watching it. Because when I look at the disciplines that we've talked about, several of them have a definitely masculine overtone, in my opinion. You know, the liberator, the challenger, the debate maker, those all seem very masculine to me and very classic. Of course, I'm being very stereotypical when I say that. I suppose one could posit even the name of this book on executive leadership, Multiplier, kind of, you know, it's a quantitative, right? It's definitely about behavior, numbers. Even though she doesn't talk a lot about numbers, there are definitely desired results, right? We're going to have 2X at the end of this, 2X behavioral improvement. So in that way, I think it has a very masculine kind of overtone. But then, and of course, that's interesting given that the author is absolutely female. But then if I think about that further, you know, most workplaces are still very masculinized, if that's a word, and still have a very masculine overtone because, of course, they were created by men in the first place. So I would say, particularly in America, I would say this is a place to watch and to be continued. What do you think?
So it's very interesting. I think this is something that I have learned is that we all have each type of personality, right? Like as a woman, I know there are some times that I also have a certain characteristic that might be classified as masculine. And I'm sure there are men who might have some feminine side of qualities. I think that as a whole, looking at the talent magnet, liberator, challenger, debater, and investor, it hits all different types of personalities. So I thought that was very interesting because probably somebody who invests in others could be seen as a feminine quality versus, like you said, the debater, challenger, liberator is more like, you know, more somebody who is, you know, charging ahead type of a person. So I like the fact that it's rounded and holistic and it touches different types of, you know, personalities.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there is a point in the in the book that has frequently asked questions. And I don't think this is exactly how the question was worded, but it's basically to the effect of, can anyone become a multiplier? And she basically says, yes, it's about your willingness to change your behavior. You know, I'm actually credentialed in values work, and that goes much deeper. And so sometimes I get a little bit annoyed at just behavioral things. But the great thing about this book is that it's so, I don't want to say prescriptive, because there's a lot of room in terms of the behaviors. But it does give one, like we talked about in the very beginning and takeaways, the opportunity if you want to become this multiplier. It's almost like there's a roadmap, not exactly, because that would be more prescriptive than she wants to be, I would say, I'm guessing. But there's definitely a path. Let's just look at it like that, like stones in a path. If you want to become a multiplier, then I guess probably anybody could.
I think so, too. That's great. Any final words of wisdom for the audience?
Well, thank you. I'm really glad I read this book, and I thank you for that opportunity. I would say along the lines of what we just discussed about the possibility of anyone becoming a multiplier, like all leadership paths, it really is a choice. And if you're willing to commit, I mean, I think you can see that the path is, the gradient is steep. You know, this is a mountain, not a hill, if you really want to get all five things. But I think even if you're willing to just choose one thing, like being a talent magnet, I can only imagine the level of, I've had certain roles that gave me that opportunity. One of the things we did not touch on today, and I won't because it's a whole segue, is the level to which multipliers are supported within the organization, because I think it would be very hard to be a multiplier by yourself. But I think if you're willing to pursue maybe one of these that you think your organization can support you in, something like being a talent magnet can only benefit everyone, including you developing the skill set. So I would say, you know, pick one thing that you feel you'll be supported in. And if you need a point of departure, I hope that this will help start you today. And Preeti, thank you for being a multiplier and having our conversation.
Thank you, Lucy, for being on the podcast and great insights and you know, being a multiplier yourself and how you're juggling so many different things. And thank you, audience, for tuning in today. Check out the book, Multipliers by Liz Wiseman. And thank you.